I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast, Christmas Spectacular, the season finale, or whatever you want to call it. Probably the last episode of the year. With me today, I have Marty and Brandon. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And we're going to be looking at a couple of Christmas set revenge films, I guess, that had even more in common than I expected when we picked this. I was not aware that they were both like set during Christmas as heavily as they are, that they both feature someone who like taking a several year break to become a vigilante, and that they both co-star rappers. And they both feel quite racist against Hispanic people, to be honest.
Yeah. But both have one courtesy good guy Hispanic person. And in one case, a wife, woman.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it took me a while to think of that, yes.
Yeah.
There's good Latino people in this movie.
As if the movie's trying to say, we're not racist, really. Look, we made one a good one.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Pierre Morel's Peppermint from 2018 and John Woo's Hollywood comeback, Silent Night, from 2023. Those are the movies. I had no idea Peppermint was such a, like, set around Christmas as it was. Like, I really thought it was going to be that opening scene was going to be Christmas, and then the rest was going to be not Christmas, but then they're like, they make a deal out of it. Like, do you know what day it is? It's December 21st.
Exactly 5 years since. Yeah.
And then they don't really bring it up again. It's not that much Christmas. They just make a deal about it being set around Christmas.
And it also premiered in August, which is weird.
Ooh.
Why it released in September?
Was Silent Night a Christmas release when it came out?
I think it was.
December 23rd. Oh, yeah, it actually was last year. All right, that's cool. Yeah, but the summer release of Peppermint, it stars Jennifer Garner, which I guess it's a bit of a comeback to the action genre for her. She really do anything between this and Elektra.
Yeah, especially those commercials for Capital One or whatever they were.
Well, I wouldn't
I don't
know
think
what,
we've had there.
Yeah.
No, no, so you're missing out. No, you're not missing out. They're the most bland commercials imaginable, so.
We don't even have Capital One, whatever that is.
It's like a credit card or something like that. It's, okay, we'll move on.
Well, she all did right. The Kingdom.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think she was in that.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
So, you know, she took a 10, 12 year break from doing action movies. Now she's back with the everyone's favorite, not Luc Besson guy, Pierre Morel, in a movie that doesn't get credited to Luc Besson. So I don't know. I don't know if that's good, if that means it's good or if it means it's bad. I just feel every time Pierre Morel makes a movie that people like, they're just like, they're basically just thinking Luc Besson directed it. Like, I feel he gets so much credit for like District 13 and Taken.
Mm-hmm.
And people are all like, oh, yeah. Luc Besson. And I was like, he didn't make those movies, you know.
No, he's getting pigeonholed, right? He's just getting hired so they can put from the director of Taken on the poster.
No.
Between this and The Gunman.
Terrible movie.
I haven't seen it. But
I haven't seen it either.
Now he's prolific again. He made Freelance last year and Canary Black this year. I watched neither and I've heard very bad things about both of them. But
like the same guy.
I heard very bad things about this one too, mostly, and it was not that bad. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was alright.
I think it was an excellent, efficient vigilante movie.
It's certainly efficient.
Yeah.
It's certainly a vigilante movie too.
Oh.
Yeah, we got Jennifer Garner, the hard working mom, with a husband who's a little bit of a piece of shit, I think. Yeah. Doesn't really come up, but he's looking into robbing a drug dealer, which I'm very glad they said out loud, because I was not fully understanding that, to be honest.
Yeah, same here.
I'm sorry to the guy who played her husband, but you are too generic looking white guy for me to notice you. Like, I was like, oh, the robbery is going to go down, and that's how her family is going to be killed in crossfire. But, oh, okay, now it turns out it's her husband who's doing the robbery, and then he pulls out of the robbery. And then, of course, it's also her daughter's birthday.
Yeah, because her husband doesn't pull out of everything. They do have a daughter.
Yeah, but also then, because it starts with Jennifer Garner's having beef with some upper-class bitch in a parking lot over Girl Scout cookies, because they're stepping on their turf. There's a turf war over Girl Scout cookies.
Which could be a movie by itself.
Yeah, which comes back more than you would think it does. But then it turns out that the rich lady hosts a party on the daughter's birthday to get everyone in the class to come to their party instead, as like a revenge ploy to get back at them for stepping on their cookie turf.
Yeah.
And
Don't fuck with Karen.
Yeah, makes the daughter sad, I guess. And so then they gotta go to the Christmas fair to make up for it. That doesn't seem that relevant. I mean, because they're looking to kill the husband anyway. So they would have just... I guess maybe he would have been alone when they killed him the next day if he didn't go to the Christmas fair, but he was going to die anyway.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, but your cookie beef with Karen didn't actually affect the death of your husband. He was doing well. Yeah, but maybe you could have kept that daughter. So they go to the Christmas fair, yeah, and then they get ice cream, and the daughter wants 2 scoops of peppermint ice cream, and that's where the title comes from.
Yeah, it sounds like a terrible flavor, too.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of mint ice cream. So, in a different world, this is called, like, Rocky Road or Chocolate Chip.
Rocky Road is a much better title for a vigilante film.
Maybe it's copyrighted.
True.
Oh, okay.
I had to get a generic ice cream flavor.
Yeah, because this is the only mention of peppermint in the entire movie.
Yeah, I see. According to Wikipedia, they say it's the alias of Jennifer Garner's character. I'm like, no, it's not. When do they say that?
They definitely don't.
If you heard that in the movie, write us an email and tell us when did they say that. Yeah, so her husband, daughter get shot, drive-by shooting. She gets shot too, to be honest, but she lives.
Shot from a car, same as Silent Night.
If it had been a random shooting, that's why I thought it was going to be a random shooting, because it was like, okay, they got too much in common, these movies. They're just the same movie.
And she really holds on to that ice cream cone during the shooting. She's not letting go of the ice cream. She's running.
I wouldn't need her.
Okay. Daughter or ice cream, you know?
Yeah, well, if she didn't get shot, then she could have had the ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
Cheer her up while her husband's dying on the ground. She shot, goes on a coma, I guess, for a bit. I don't know how long. It's so long that it's when she wakes up, it's the last day they gotta press charges or let the shooters go. And we get...
Also, she's the only person in the movie ever to lose hair while in a coma.
Well, I think did she get shot in the head? Did they have to shave her head to operate on her brain?
I thought she was kind of nicked by a bullet, maybe. I don't know.
They were just thinking of Steven Seagal in Mark for Death.
Hard to Kill.
Hard to Kill.
Was it that one? Oh, sorry.
It's all
right. And, she has short hair when she comes out of a coma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Fine, cool. And yeah, then she goes to court.
Yeah, and then later she just has long hair again, so they really just... I don't know why they bothered giving her short hair for, like, 2 scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we meet John Gallagher Jr. as Detective Carmichael, who's the detective on the case, I guess.
Yeah, as soon as you see him, you know the character. Like, the first frame, you know, okay, he's the guy investigating. He's going to sympathize maybe a little bit. He's going to, like, be morally conflicted. And there's a little twist involving him, but as soon as you see him, you know, like, the character. It's a pretty cliched movie, but I enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember John Gallagher from The Newsroom. Terrible Aaron Sorkin show. But I can't see anything else when I see a very punishable face.
Yes. Well, you should check out Hush. It's a home invasion movie where the victim is deaf and he plays the home invader. It's fun.
I'm just going to assume I'm not going to check that out.
Cool. Yeah, and he has a partner played by John Ortiz.
The good Mexican.
The good Mexican, yes. Because there's a scene between the two of them where John Ortiz is talking like, oh, he's got a man in the police force. He's got a man on the inside. And like, these are the only two cop characters we know at this point. So it's got to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, the movie still surprised me.
Yes.
Yeah. She identifies the victim. No problem. Day one. They go to court. And, oh no, yeah. And then random guy shows up at her house and is like, oh, I see you're on medication. Might make your brain foggy.
Yeah, offers her some money.
Yeah, just tells her how they're going to overturn any conviction. And then, well, that happens. They're free to go. They don't believe her.
That guy is the lawyer of the shooters.
The defense attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she's put in an ambulance. She goes bad, put in an ambulance, runs away. Smash cut to 5 years later, where we just learned through some dialogue that she robbed a bank off screen for $500,000 or something.
Well, she worked
50,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, get down on the floor, give me your money. She probably stole it through insider stuff.
Yeah.
She wasn't working at a bank.
Yeah, it's a reference to Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Definitely. Definitely what they were thinking.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, she took $50,000, I think, not $500,000, and fucked off to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and then they're like, oh, they find a video on YouTube of her doing underground cage fighting.
Where is that movie?
Oh.
Yeah, where's anything? We just smash cut to 5 years later, and they're like, oh yeah, she's badass now. She stole some money, and she did an underground cage fight. And
she stole guns.
She stole guns, and she stole only military-grade guns, so she knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
None of those pussy weapons for Joe every day. Yeah, and then she's strung up the shooters from a Ferris wheel. And then that's when they were like, you know what day it is? December 21st. 5-year anniversary.
Yeah, she kind of like hangs him up like a cartel would. It's kind of like an ironic thing, I guess.
Yeah. And she just goes on a killing spree. You don't even have time to show all the killings. They're like, she kills the judge, and then they're like, oh yeah, and also she killed the attorney, but we forgot to show you that.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I don't think the judge did that much wrong.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, they should have showed the attorney being killed instead of the judge. They dropped the ball there.
She just says, oh, you're corrupt. How corrupt are you? How much money did you take over the years or something? Yeah. If you can remember my name, I'll let you go. And she blows him up.
Yeah.
Well, I do enjoy the film. That is kind of a misstep for it.
There was a point where I was like, are we supposed to think that she's right in doing this? Or is this like the first sign of she's going too far? But I think it's the first option.
I think the movie just thinks that it established well enough that this judge was corrupt by her saying, you are corrupt.
Maybe, but I had the same reaction as Marty. I wasn't sure what was going on.
Yeah, she just wasn't believed, and that was that's corruption.
Yeah.
She straight up Jesuses him to the table, too. Like, puts nails through his palms and just...
Oh, yeah. It's not exactly poetic justice.
Yeah.
But it's nice that it at least goes for an R rating.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's even if the blood is largely computer-generated, but
yeah,
what you gonna do? That's the par for the course these days.
Yeah. I think there's one really cool death scene later on that's completely bloodless. We'll talk about it when we get to it, I guess.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, she's living out in a van, but down by the river. But she is living in a van.
In Skid Row, which, like... they give as the official name of the area.
Yeah.
Like Skid Row is, that's just a term for like slums, right?
No, it is. It is a nickname for a specific neighborhood in LA too.
Oh, okay.
In this case, it is referring to a specific area of LA, yeah.
Okay.
It's not like that. MST3K Asia, and they're like, wow, that narrows it down. and now there's a good cop too, a new good cop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, FBI.
A lady cop. Yeah, Lisa Inman, who she gets dragged into it when they realize that it's Jennifer Garner that's back.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot about her for a bit. She's gonna be slightly important for a little bit.
Yeah, and during this time, Jennifer Garner's character has been policing Skid Row. She's been, you know, policing all these hobos, and they even paint a mural of her at one point, which is kind of a weird note, but whatever, I'll take it.
Yeah, because the cops mentioned that crime has actually gone down in Skid Row.
Yeah,
she's there.
Yeah, what is she doing? Like, how do you police that area? Do you just like shoot people who are trying to steal other people's shoes or something?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Every Hispanic she sees. And now everyone's afraid of doing crime down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then she basically goes after the Diego Garcia, the guy behind, that was the guy who her husband was intending to rob.
Yeah, who killed her husband for even only thinking about stealing from him.
Yeah, and she goes to his house, I guess.
And I don't think he's a very good antagonist, really. He doesn't really make much of an impression. I think the first time he's introduced, we barely even see his face when he chops the dude's head off.
Yeah, he's pretty forgettable.
Yeah.
Yeah, barely remember him. Barry just non character. I think the most noticeable thing about him is that he too has a daughter. So she's like a little bit, oh no, can I kill this guy in front of his daughter? It's going to be like me. Or, well, not really, but she should have shot the daughter instead and been like an eye for an eye. They never go that dark.
And she's going to grow up to be a criminal anyway.
Because she's Hispanic?
No. No.
Who are you, the screenwriter of this movie? Chad St. John.
What a name.
That is the most porn star name I've ever heard. Well, he wrote Punisher Dirty Laundry. He's got, you know, and he wrote London Has Fallen, which I guess he also hates brown people. Well, that movie does start with just like, oh yeah, the U.S. is just drone bombing weddings.
Yeah. No, Chad, we cannot have him have them drone bombing weddings in Mexico. Why would we? No.
Yeah, well, so they try to set like a trap for her, and she just, they blow up a house. And of course, she just survives.
Yeah, I think the rest of the plot is mostly just, oh, they do things and they shoot at each other.
Which I enjoy.
Not a lot of, yeah, it's fun for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think it works well for like a vigilante film where you're like outraged by these crimes and the justice system isn't working. And I know you're not supposed to feel that way, but for a movie, it works because it does push the right buttons for me. Like, oh, the justice system isn't working and all these criminals are on the loose. She has to avenge her family and kill the bad guys who are so heinous. You know, I mean, I like it. I think it totally works on that level. It works efficiently. There's not much time wasted. It works.
Yeah, for me, all the stuff with the justice system and the criminals was maybe the part that didn't really work. Just, oh, it's a female-led action movie. Cool.
Oh, it works on that level as well.
Yeah.
A lot of people
though
trash.
Also extremely forgettable.
Elements are forgettable. I will give you that. But yeah. A lot of people trash like female-led action movies. Like, oh, it's like a 60-pound woman like throwing 300-pound men around, but I don't know. I thought this was grounded enough to work. I mean, obviously grounded probably isn't the right word, but it works. I felt it was realistic enough for, like, to be believable.
Yeah. It helps that Jennifer Garner is fucking ripped in this, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that helps.
Which is another thing these two movies have in common. They both try to hide how ripped their lead actor is by making them dress like a goofy house father, mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's ripped. Big muscular arms.
Yeah, you can believe that she would kill all these people.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's what going to Europe for a couple of months and doing years, I guess, and doing cage fighting will do for you.
Yeah. All those cage fights over here. Am I right, Stein?
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering, which part of Europe is this? It's like Hungary?
Okay. All out watching the underground fights all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I think we kind of skipped over like maybe the best scene of the whole movie. This is the shootout at the pinata factory.
Yes.
Oh,
it was like really good. I'm surprised that Pierre Morel made this almost. I think all the shootouts in Taken are like garbage, and it's like, wait, you directed this too? This is a good shootout. And then like Spanish speed metal starts playing over, and I'm like, hey, what are we doing there, buddy?
No, it's just a great idea to have a shootout in a piñata storage.
Not enough piñatas getting blown up, though. But other than that,
yeah,
it's probably the highlight of the film.
And my favorite, like, kill of the movie, I don't think it's in this scene, but a later action scene, is when she pushes, like, the desk through the ceiling, through the floor, onto the guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's some good stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that, and it's just kind of like, you don't see that often, and it does look like something that could actually kill somebody.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it hurts.
Mm-hmm. But other than the pinata factor, I think the action scenes are pretty average.
Yeah.
Not really the strong point of the movie. More like the righteous rage of like a vigilante film is probably more of its strong point.
I think it's very muddled.
Oh, I mean, it does get muddled at times, especially with the judge being killed. But I mean, like, what did that guy do? But I thought it worked as a vigilante thriller that kind of like makes you angry and like, these people, I don't understand them, so we gotta kill them.
Yeah. They look different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get our bad cop twist.
Mm-hmm.
We're not gonna say which cop it is. Someone gets killed, and Jennifer Garner uses their phone to just like call the media, and someone gets herself on television and be like, oh, this is my location. This guy zooming in on their iPhone, like, this guy's bad.
Yeah.
Lynch him.
And then everyone, and then the police learn about it from watching TV and show up.
Because they have a television playing 24/7 in the cafeteria without sound.
It's a bit of a contrived way to get to your action climax, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, Stein, in Norway, do you show suspects' full names on television or in the news?
No, I don't think so. No.
No, we don't either.
I do not think that's normal. No.
Americans love it, though.
Oh,
as soon as they have a possible subject, they're like, this is his name, this is his address.
Go kill him, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the gist of the American justice system.
Because, like, even when they're starting to suspect it's her, her name is, like, on the news, in the newspapers, with a photo. Like, jeez.
Yeah, just, like, after, like, the first killing, it's like you get someone who... some tweets, be like, oh yeah, this is her, hashtag Riley North or some shit.
Yeah,
like Americans would ever approve of murdering someone extrajudiciously. Which is a reference to the Brian Thompson thing that just happened a few days ago.
Oh,
the healthcare CEO. Yeah. Everyone's cheering here.
For a moment there, I was scared that Brian Thompson, the actor, had died.
Oh, no.
Or is he dead already?
I have no idea.
Just don't think he's working very much. So then our drug lord Diego just thinks that, oh yeah, she can't kill me now because we're on TV. And turns out he's wrong.
Yeah.
She didn't give a shit about being on TV. Honestly, like the 40 people she killed prior should have been a hint, dude.
Yeah. That man had faith in the justice system.
Oh yeah, and at some point here, Method Man shows up, because I promised you a rapper in this, and it's a fairly small part. He just shows up. At first I thought it was Ice Cube, but it's Method Man.
Oh, shit, yeah. That's him? Okay.
You know, from Wu-Tang Clan and The Wire. And how high? That was a movie, right?
Yeah.
He was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess this Peppermint. A lot of people making like references to, I don't know, like Death Wish or Joan Wick, of course, because...
Ah, clever.
Yeah, real clever, real clever. If you ever wrote Joan Wick in your review, you're a hack.
Stop doing it, Pierre.
Yeah, law-abiding citizen, I guess. People also, it's like sort of similar. But no.
No, not really.
but it reminded me of this movie called Blue Tiger that I watched from 1994 with Virginia Madsen, where her son gets killed in a random drive-by shooting, and she goes like, into the Yakuza?
No, the supermarket hold-up shooting, I think. Or supermarket, a mini-mart.
All right, yeah. She gets like a back tattoo and shit. She gets super into the Yakuza to get revenge. And Harry Dean Stanton with an oxygen tank smoking like 40 cigarettes in 2 minutes. It's a fun movie. Check that out.
Yeah.
Or maybe you have, since you...
No, I watched the trailer.
All right.
Yeah, it looked like fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I fell down a rabbit hole of American Yakuza action movies for some reason.
Oh. Hmm. Any of them good?
American Yakuza 2 I thought was really good, which is not actually American Yakuza 2. Like American Yakuza, Viggo Mortensen movie, kind of fun. But American Yakuza 2 is one of those movies where they just took a movie that already existed. It's called like Blowback or something.
Back to back.
Yeah, that's what it's called. That was what it's actually called. It's got Michael Rooker. And yeah, it's just one of those movies that existed. And it has Ryo Ishibashi.
Yeah.
He's in Blue Tiger as well. He's in all of them. Maybe yeah. I was just watching Ryo Ishibashi movies. Maybe that's what I was doing. But that one's really fun, I think. But it's not related at all, of course. They just took a movie that had the same guy in it, which also deals with a bit of Yakuza, and they just slapped the title onto it. I was like, this is the sequel. And I saw there's one more, which didn't have Ryo Ishibashi in it, and it had Chad McQueen instead. So
it was better.
Yeah, definite upgrade. It's called New York Undercover, New York Cop, or something, New York. First two words were definitely New York, and it had Chad McQueen in it. Rest in peace, Chad McQueen.
Yeah.
Gone too soon.
Yeah.
and then this movie totally ends on a sequel bait. They definitely set up a sequel. They're like, don't know why, she's killed all the people she's supposed to kill, but they promise that she's going to be back.
Maybe in the sequel she finds out there's like a whole country full of Mexicans.
Jesus. It made $53 million worldwide against a budget of 25, so I don't think that sequel's coming. Frank Scheck of the Hollywood Reporter called the film Death Wish on steroids. Okay. I mean, Death Wish is pretty contained compared to it, but I don't know if that's the comparison I would make.
No.
Go on a limb and call Frank Scheck a lazy hack, too. And after this, Jennifer Garner, I guess, went back to being divorced from Ben Affleck. And then I guess we got Silent Night.
Yeah.
The movie, again, it's the surprising similarities. It seems Pierre Morel and John Woo share a lot of similar thoughts about Mexicans. Yeah. We got Silent Night, which is... I don't know what to say. Like, it's more set in, like, not reality.
I think it maybe is more racist, but at the same time, it's so obvious that John Woo just does not give a fuck and likes simplicity. So it's less racist?
I get what you're saying. Yeah, I can see that.
He's just like, yeah, we need bad guys. They're all in a gang, so it makes sense that they're all the same ethnicity. So they are. Here you go. Have a movie.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's probably a bit more realistic than like multiracial gangs in like a Death Wish film or something like that. Not that I know anything about gangs, but...
Yeah, there's not many gangs in your neighborhood.
Not in the cornfields of Illinois.
Ex- except those pesky children.
Oh!
Of the corn.
The children of the corn.
Yeah, and this is, again, another similarity. It opens with an action scene and then it sort of flashes back. Same as Peppermint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of. I mean, Peppermint does that and then it sort of goes back and goes chronological. But this one...
It goes chronological.
Starts chronological and then just flashes back.
Yeah. He has like visions or flashbacks himself and we follow his POV, sort of. Yeah, I was kind of confused during the opening scene. At first I was like...
I was too. I thought it was we were sort of jumping into the... Like it was maybe the climax and then we were going to flash back. But then Joel Kinnaman just got fucking... trashed up, shot in the throat.
Yeah.
Fuck, I guess gets owned, yeah. And it's like, oh, I guess maybe this isn't the climax.
No, but at first I was like, oh, he's trying to catch the balloon, and then I'm like, well, he's climbing over a wall for a fucking balloon. Jesus, chill, dude.
I was thinking the same thing at first.
And then we see the guys in the two cars shooting at each other. I was like, oh, that's weird that would happen to him now that he's chasing a balloon. But no, he's actually chasing those guys. I was like, what the fuck's going on? And then later we get a reveal that he isn't even a cop, which was like, oh, I thought he was a cop. No.
It's just some guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess the sort of like the big selling point of this... Well, the one thing, of course, is it's the first Hollywood movie by John Woo in 20 years since Paycheck. We all well know and love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, basically, since Red Cliff was sort of historical, I guess, but it was action movie. But even then, since then, he basically only made like one action movie. Like Manhunt was kind of like a comeback for John Woo 2 into like the sort of more traditional action movies you know John Woo for.
This one was Hong Kong or China, I think, that he made it in.
Yeah, I think it's the Chinese now.
Yeah.
He's old as shit now. He is 79 years old. So I do hear rumors that his second unit does a lot of the directing now, maybe.
Okay.
Because he's very old. Yeah. But the other selling point was that it was dialogue-less. There was no dialogue, which is quite, it's just... It's kind of sort of bullshit. Joel Kinnaman, who plays the lead, he doesn't really say anything because he gets shot in the throat in like the first scene. He does say one line in a flashback, but it's not actually really dialogue-less. There's like text messages, and you can listen to the radio, and other characters do talk.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it's a fake promise. It's not actually. They really hyped that up like it was gonna be dialogue-less. In the pre-production and stuff, and I was like, "Well, it's not actually dialogue-less. Come on, guys, you're just saying that."
It's close enough, I think.
Yeah,
like, they were never gonna make this a silent movie.
No, but like before I knew about it, I thought it was gonna be like Joel Kinnaman just like hunting people for like 90 minutes, and like a one long night movie where he didn't say anything, but. But Joel Kinnaman's a great guy to cast for a character who doesn't speak.
Yeah.
he's got a very particular face.
Yes.
I was impressed.
Yeah, I liked it. I'm not like a super big fan of him as the lead in the movie, but you know, he's always good.
Yeah. I think I've mostly only seen him in The Killing.
The TV show.
He was in the RoboCop remake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
It was okay.
Good choice. And it was in Suicide Squad.
And Suicide Squad, the sequel to Suicide Squad.
Yes. But he's good here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This movie, we're on Christmas Eve, and Joel Kinnaman's son gets accidentally hit in a drive-by shooting while they're showing off his new bicycle.
But it's not really a drive-by shooting, though, is it? Because the shooting doesn't happen at something they're driving by. It's just two cars shooting at each other.
Yeah, so they don't drive by. I guess it's like a drive concurrent shooting because they're both driving and both shooting at each other.
Yeah.
Drive along shooting.
Yeah.
And so then he chases them down. That's what we start with.
but he's wearing like an ugly Christmas sweater, and he got a bell around his neck already.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought that was like something like, oh, that's a memory of his son or whatever. No, his son is technically not even dead yet.
Mm-hmm. No, so yeah, it
definitely
that's true.
Isn't. Yeah. And so one of the cars crashes, and then he hits the other one with a metal bar. That's his only plan. And then it turns out they all have guns, and he didn't think about that. So yeah. He gets shot the fuck up, including like right in his throat, which he just survives that. His vocal cord stopped the bullet.
Yeah. It does leave him with a very tiny scar, though. So.
They tried to give him one of those like voice, electronic voice, robot voice modulators, like that you've seen that they you don't always die from tobacco commercials, and it probably costs like $1 million. He just like spikes it on the ground after one use. So there's that.
Yeah, and then he becomes very like distant, and his wife leaves him. That's what happens. He basically just sits in bed all day and becomes an alcoholic. Or he sits in the garage all day and becomes an alcoholic.
Yeah. And the wife, played by Catalina Moreno, Colombian actress who was nominated for an Academy Award in 2004, I believe.
Oh, it's the Maria Full of Grace woman.
That's her. Good actress, but...
Did not know that.
Usually sort of gets these small roles only in American movies somehow. The ones that I've seen, at least.
Yeah. Shocking.
But, you know, she's a good guy Hispanic character.
Well, she does leave him.
I'd leave him, too.
But they don't... he's pretty miserable. There, so yeah, fair. Good on you, girl. Yeah. Get out there.
Yes.
Yeah, basically that's then he decides, I'm gonna kill them 1 year exactly to the day. So that's the same thing. It's like it's 1 year since the day they died. And he makes that plan. It's like he literally goes to the calendar, finds like Christmas Eve next year, and it's like they all die.
Kill them all.
Yes.
So it's good to have a goal to work towards.
Yeah. He buys a midlife crisis car. He starts working out, which is good when you're depressed. It's something they always recommend.
Yeah, this guy's my hero now.
So he's healing.
He gets really ripped. And then he goes to talk to a cop to sort of look at the... Can I identify the gangsters? And cop is played by Kid Cudi. So that's you. You got your second rapper. Who Bingo. Is? He's actually in this movie, as opposed to Method Man. Who I was like, what? You were here? Yeah. And then he recognizes the people. And he takes pictures of them, and then he takes, you know, he's found one of the worst guys because he takes a picture of him 3 times, as if just okay. And it's the same picture, my dude. It's a picture on the wall, and you just gotta. But he just takes picture with his phone like 3 times. Like, oh yeah, it's really important. I hope the third picture turned out really great.
He's still a dad with technology, right? So.
Yeah. So then he makes his like master plan of how he's gonna go and kill them, and. Does like surveillance on them, collects evidence.
Because again, the justice system fails because the cops have certain limits to what they can do because of the law. Damned pesky law.
Yeah. And so then he finally gets around to kidnapping a gang member. And also all this time you keep seeing all these Mexicans just around in this fake town. It's LP, is that it? Los Palomas or something?
Yeah, I think that was it, yeah. In Texas.
And they were basically just handing out drugs on every corner to kids like it's candy. Yeah, but then finally kidnaps a guy. And what guy, they have a bit of a fight. He throws him through a glass table. And then he sends the guy. He just leaves the guy with a flash drive at the cop's front door. And it's like... Yeah, you should do something about this. Or I'm going to do what you don't want to do.
As a Christmas gift. Because he includes like a Christmas card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a time for guy. Then Kid Cudi p- puts the flash drive in his computer, and he's like, oh yeah, this is what he's gonna do.
Mm-hmm. And circling back to that garage fight, that was kind of one of the few notes on the film that kind of didn't really ring true for me, because he gets stabbed in the artery like twice, and he doesn't go to the hospital or anything. He just kind of magically survives being stabbed in like the arteries, and I don't know. It's a good fight, but that note just kind of rang a little hollow.
Yeah, I mean, Joel Kinnaman can take hella damage in this movie and just keep on moving. Yes. He's just fine. Yeah, no, then he just kind of like stumbles upon like an already ongoing shootout.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. Was it a shootout sparked by like when he like threw the severed fingers at the gang boss or something? I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah, I think it was implied that he started like a gang war.
Because the cops are there. Because we got John Woo's daughter's in there, which I certainly just realized, because I also watched like his sort of reimagining of the killer this week just for fun, to sort of get a feel of where John Woo's current style, 80-year-old action-ator John Woo. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is his daughter, because she's also in the killer. And I guess that's his daughter's just doing cameos in his acting in his movies now. And yeah, she plays the cop that Joel Kinnaman tries to save, and then she gets shot in the ass when she's trying to crawl into his car. That's John Woo's daughter. So now you know that.
She had to be on set because she's his legal caregiver. might as well make a cameo.
And die.
Oh yeah, she died. It was spoilers for the killer, but she also died for the killer, so I don't know what kind of relationship they have. So yeah, then he steals a phone. Steals a phone from a guy.
Oh yeah.
And films himself killing him, mm-hmm. and sends it to the crime boss, or sends it in like a group chat.
I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, he just shows the guy being killed, but when they get the text, it's like they immediately know who sent it. It's like he didn't like flip the selfie cam, did he, and show himself killing it? Because mm-hmm. it just feels like they immediately know, oh, it's that guy. We know who this guy is now. Even though all we have is just a video of our friend getting shot in the back.
Yeah, I was confused by that too.
I didn't understand that.
I mean,
I think cell phones confuse John Woo.
Yeah, he has no evidence that it's Joel Kinnaman, but he just kind of like knows instantly that that's who's responsible. It didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't get that part.
He was like, the guy didn't say anything. It must be the guy who can't talk.
Yeah, of course, the bad guy's called Playa. That's his name. Only called Playa, and he has a face tattoo.
He really loves the beach.
I was just thinking the same thing. That's the only word I remember from Spanish class. Playa is beach.
Playa.
Then alrighty, dorday.
Sorry?
Isn't like alrighty, dorday mean something? I don't know, we're going way off track. But anyway.
Which means it also wasn't necessary that they found out who he was?
Not really. And also, I don't think they know. Do they even know that they killed his son?
No, I don't think so.
Like, it was so random. It's not like in Peppermint, they go to court. They know they killed him. They know they killed him, and they get away with it. And this one, it just feels like, well, is it Playa that shoots him in the throat earlier? Like, maybe, is he supposed to remember him from...
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So maybe he's supposed to remember him from that. But they never go to court or anything in this movie, so... although, I mean, he should be much more reliable as a witness on, oh, this is the guy that shot me in the throat. I remember his face from when he shot me from 1 foot away.
With his distinct face tattoo.
Well, as opposed to in Peppermint, where they can argue that, oh, yeah, they were in a moving car, you couldn't see them.
Mm-hmm. And you've been in a coma. Yeah, Playa also has, like... giant Christmas balls hanging from his ceiling.
Oh, wait, is Playa different from Webface? Because I'm looking on the Wikipedia here, and there's Playa, and there's Webface. Was Webface the main villain?
Oh, are we confusing them? I think he does have a web tattoo.
Okay.
No. I mean, maybe they should have cast two not very similar-looking bald Hispanic men.
Yes, a rare misstep for the film. Then the scene where he hugs a random kid at Walmart...
Yeah.
Yeah, he keeps having visions of his son, I guess. And then we get to the villain lair, and it just feels like a video game. He's just like climbing up a stair, case and shooting people the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, like a level out of House of the Dead or something. Just keep going forward and shoot.
Yeah.
Nah, I thought it was great. I thought it was an excellent shootout.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
except for the CGI scene. Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kid Cutie shows up.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, like, you don't really get, like, the John Woo action of old. I mean, he's still, doing cool stuff and good action, but you definitely, you don't get, like, the dual-wielding gun and the squibs of the old.
Yeah, well, there is no squibs. Kid Cutie does dual-wield a couple of pistols briefly towards the end when he shoots, like, three guys who walk through a doorway. But it's a brief scene.
Yeah, because he joins Joel Kinnaman at the end for, like, a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shows up after having looked at the plans on the flash drive and be like, oh yeah, I want to get in on some of this killing.
It reminds me of Charles Bronson and Ed Lauder in Death Wish 3. I know it always circles back to that, but that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, so they shoot a couple of people. That's what they do.
Yeah. So did you guys know about the gimmick before you watched it?
Like the which silence? Gimmick?
The silence?
Yeah, as I said, they promoted that pretty heavily.
Okay. I completely missed that beforehand, so I was quite surprised.
They kind of put it in the title.
Well, true, but I've seen other movies called Silent Nights that weren't silent.
Carpet Day! My expectations were a little subverted, because, like, I did too think it was going to be, like, a one-night Killfest film, but it turned out to be, like, a year-long Killfest, but it's still very enjoyable.
A year-long depression fest, and then one... one night kill fest.
Okay, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah, 1 year of preparation.
Which I enjoyed. I didn't mind the preparation at all. A lot of people were kind of down on it, saying, oh, it dragged the film down, but I thought it was kind of necessary to establish the character's rage.
Yeah, I was fine with it too.
Mm-hmm.
There is also a kind of cool chase scene between him in his car and a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we sort of dropped over the part where he's just driving around in his midlife crisis car, vigilante shit.
Yeah, in his Santa sleigh, his red car. Yeah, that's good stuff. And also, like, why do people keep trying in movies to beat a car with a motorcycle?
Oh.
Like, there's a clear, very clear disadvantage there.
Yeah. And it is worth noting that Joel Kinnaman does barf after he kills his first person. So he's human. He's human. He still regrets killing the first person. But then after that, he's fine just shooting everyone in sight.
Yeah.
It's like, you gotta get through the first kill, then you're good. He doesn't like unload like a ton of barf like every time he kills somebody. It's just the first person.
That would have been fun in the stairway.
Yeah. Just dry heaving the whole time.
Yes. No, yeah, I think this movie might have been better had it started at the start, so not in the middle of the action scene, but just started at the start and shown him being able to talk, because he loses his voice, but, like, you don't hear him speak before he does, so it's sort of like, does that matter?
Yeah, like, I feel they were maybe too preoccupied with having a gimmick instead of why should we have a gimmick?
Yeah, because then you can like juxtapose the silence with the non-silence, like no silence when his family is alive, and then after he's plunged into a world of silence, maybe a nice juxtaposition. Yeah. But no, instead the entire movie is silent, and I think that it loses a little bit of power because of it.
Maybe.
Yeah. Of course, the movie in your mind is always better than the movie on screen. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I knew most of this like going into it, but I heard some bad stuff, but I was quite pleasantly surprised by it.
Oh yeah, me too. So
it was quite good. I'd probably of like the three, if we call like The Killer and Manhunt and this like a late style John Woo trilogy, I'd probably rank this last, but that's because I really enjoyed those other two movies. And this does not end on a sequel bait.
No.
Hence with Joel Kinnaman's wife reading a letter he sent her at the son's grave. And there's a train set around the grave that Joel Kinnaman set up.
Where do you plug that in at?
Oh, I don't know. His battery.
I guess that makes more sense.
Good at the batteries, like, lasted, like, so long enough for him to run around for days until she went there.
Yeah. But we don't see him die, though, do we?
No, it's just, like, heavily implied. Yeah. He's just fantasizing about, oh, what it would have been like to go to my son's college graduation as he's dying. Because he gets fucked up. Like, we already talked about, like, his arteries are, like, he's stabbed everywhere and he's shot everywhere.
Yeah.
He's got to be bleeding the fuck out.
Well, I understood it as he dies, but I, like, it's not a super explicit.
No, it's not. It's not like we go to his funeral or anything. It is just implied in him kind of laying on the floor and imagining his son, his dead son, growing up. And you're like, this is probably the fantasies of a dying man. But it is a bit open ended in that sense. And well, this one made $11 million at the box office. Don't know the budget of it, but that's pretty bad. So I don't think they're coming back. They're not gonna be attempting to make a sequel at all.
But maybe, like, for the sequel, he can't see.
Is it just like a blank screen for the entire film? Yeah. With sound effects.
Well, is there a holiday that's got something that you can have, like, or they can call it, like, Black Friday, and there's no way. And it's like, oh, his ex-wife died, was killed in a shootout on Black Friday.
He's blinded, like, in The Killer, and just has to grope around.
No. It's just sounds of guns for 90 minutes. Yeah, go for it.
It's better than losing your sense of touch. Just kind of flailing around.
That's hard to portray, I feel, on a gimmick.
Well, yeah. Or losing your sense of smell, that'd be...
Yeah, and then in the third movie in the trilogy, he loses hearing. And you're just in the cinema and you have no idea if you're watching a movie or no, just they didn't turn the screen on, because it's just no dialogue, no sound, and no image. And you're like, did I pay to watch a movie or did they forget to turn the projector on? I don't know. 4 stars. Yeah, and I don't know, now they say he's doing a musical or something. Or John half Lewis? Musical. Yeah, he's doing like a musical or a documentary with the pop duo Sparks. I don't know if you've done it. It was like a documentary about them by Edgar Wright. I don't know, like two years ago or something, maybe. And now he's apparently... It was hashtag Excrucior, but it's like Excrucior. I don't know to what degree this is still happening or not, but that's something that was announced... and obviously he did The Killer this year, which it was like 10 years ago he announced he was making it. And then I guess he finally got around to making it. And that was like a Peacock original, only for streaming. Apparently coming to disc next year.
Oh, okay, cool.
And other than that, I don't know if he's doing anything more. Or if, like, is that documentary coming out? Is it a documentary? Is it a musical? It's not on IMDb anymore. So exciting. Anyway, this one won't be his last movie because he literally already made another one.
So
good on you, John Woo, for getting to do some stuff at the end of your career. Since I've seen The Killer, I mean, that one plays a lot like just like John Woo sort of revisiting his greatest hits. This one doesn't really have a lot of like the John Woo touches. It's kind of like a fun thing where, because the city's called Las Palomas, which means it's Spanish for doves, and Joel Kinnaman drinks a fake vodka label which bears the Swedish word for dove, so it has references to doves, but that's mostly it. I mean, yeah, Kid Cudi does this, shoot two guns at once, but it's not the same as when Chow Yun-Fat was doing it. It doesn't look as cool anymore.
No. There is some slow motion.
Yeah, but mostly it's sort of... it goes into, I don't know, like, if you want to blame John Wick for it, or whatever. I don't know when we sort of started with the slightly too long take action.
Oh, jeez.
Because
I'm kind of over that.
Yeah.
I was over it before it started. But.
That's what you got to give. You got to go back and give Peppermint cred there where it's due. There was none of that. They had cuts, and I guess Pierre Morel isn't the guy who does too many cuts. There's Oliver Megaton. That's the guy who came in after him, and who loves doing 8,000 cuts a minute.
Yeah.
Hello, Taken 2 and 3. How you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one has a bit of that, whatever itis you want to call that. The just wanting to keep everything in like one long shot. Sorry, but do a kill. One kill, one cut. I don't want to see 7 kills in one shot anymore. Tired of it.
Yeah. Or actually film it in one take instead of all those really dumb CGI using fake hidden cuts, whatever.
All the Matthew Wan, like, oh yeah, the 7 shots digitally stitched together. And
yeah,
it looks like ass, but a lot of people are going to post it on social media and be like, wow, look how cool it is. Listen to Freebird, what a song.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want, The Killer gives you less of that. That is a more traditional John Woo style, I guess. And John Woo doing a lot of riffs in his own career. And this is more of like his little trash action DTV project that he also did. And I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it rocked.
Yeah, me too.
I can understand why someone wouldn't, because it has a lot of alienating factors, like the gimmick that doesn't quite work, and all the, like, oh, hey, look at all these dirty Mexicans giving out drugs everywhere stuff. But the stuff that worked was fun, and the action's good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I have to mention that one, like, what do you call it, the match cut? The teardrop turning into a bullet?
Yeah, there's a lot of good stylish touches here. Like when he's purchasing the guns, you can see the reflections of the sparks from the chop shop flying all over the place. You know, it's really stylish.
Yeah. I think John Woo does love a match cut. Now that you bring it up, I know like one of his favorite movies is Lawrence of Arabia, famous match cut.
The match cut.
Yeah, you can watch it again in John Wick 4, where they just did it again, the exact same shot. Well, it's not like you can't rip it off because it's too obvious. It's like extreme homage or something. I don't know what to call it. But yeah, that's been our discussion on Christmas vigilante movies with bad Mexicans and supporting roles by rappers.
kind of a niche subgenre.
Yeah, also very specifically set at the anniversaries of the original deaths.
Yeah, excellent double bill. I gotta say.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I love these films.
I did not expect them to line up as much as they did. that was surprisingly.
A little Christmas miracle.
Yeah. And maybe this is our last episode of the year. So Merry Christmas. And catch you next year. Check out the Discord. The very dormant Patreon. But it keeps the website going. We're going to try to be better. Our New Year's resolution is to record more Patreon episodes, and then once we've actually recorded them, don't have Audacity absolutely corrupt the file, and you can't export more than 22 minutes of a 57-minute episode. And therefore, you can never put it up, or you haven't found out a way to do it yet.
Well said.
And check out the website, alloutofbubblegum.com. You'll find links to everything there. Until then, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Have a good Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
See you next year.
Yep, see you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
One last question, Your Honor. Ms. North, just to clarify one point. Did you see them get out of the car?
No.
Did the car ever stop moving?
No.
And yet you identified my clients as the alleged shooters.
They did it.
Objection, Your Honor.
I object to your objection.
Okay, you identified my clients, correct?
Yes, I did. They did it.
Okay, and are you currently on any antipsychotic medications.
What?
Lorazepam, lithium, risperidone. Is there anything else that we should know about?
Wait.
You identified not one, but three men in a moving vehicle at night from 30 feet after a month in a coma and a mental breakdown and under the influence of antidepressant and antipsychotic medications. Is it possible that your recollection isn't what you thought it was?
No.
No further questions, Your Honor.
No further questions, Your Honor. Well, just one. What's in your wallet?